Okay, so the next talk is by Gaurav Sharma, and he will be presenting an estimation of structures of multiple RNA homologs using a turbo code-like algorithm.
So, good morning, everyone. Thanks for being here. And thanks, Amina, for the introduction. So I'm with the University of Rochester. The work I'll be presenting is joint work. This is primarily the work of my student, Arif Harmanji, who's graduated and is now postdoc at Yale. He couldn't be here. And David Matthews, who's a collaborator in biochemistry and biophysics. So I know this is a fairly diverse audience, so I'll try and begin with a fairly broad introduction. And I'll apologize in advance for not being able to cover all the details of the algorithmic process. That's something which I think it's more beneficial to leave everybody with an understanding of at least what we are trying to do and why it's important, rather than to try and explain all the details. If you're interested in the details, I'll be happy to talk with you. We also had, as it appears, a journal paper on this has just recently appeared. It's just appeared in BMC Bioinformatics, and I'll be providing the reference. Okay. So I'll begin with motivation and background. Why is this an important problem? I'll talk about RNA, non-coding RNA in particular, and RNA structure and significance. Then I'll talk about methods for RNA structure prediction, both for single and multiple sequence methods. Our technique is a multi-sequence method, and that's where the analogy with turbo coding comes in. So I'll present our method, TurboFold, at a high level, and show how this is an iterative probabilistic method for decoding of structures of multiple RNA homologs. And there's a very strong analogy with turbo decoding and digital communications, both in the way we look at the problem and the tools we solve, and in sort of the state of literature also at this point at which we developed this algorithm. So it's quite uncanny in the way the similarity comes about. I'll present experimental results in this process, presenting how we perform as compared to alternate algorithms which perform in the same framework. And finally, end with some concluding remarks. So I think everybody is familiar with DNA and the double helix. This is the famous discovery of Watson-Crick, where they discovered that DNA is found in this double helical pattern, where you have this pattern of complementary base pairs paired with each other across the helix. And RNA is very similar to DNA, except that thymine is replaced by uracil. So for our purposes, we'll think about RNA as a linear chain molecule. These linear chain is strong covalent bonds. These are about 50 kilocal per mole, as compared to these bonds, which are of the order of 2 to 3 kilocal per mole. And the bond strength is exponential in the free energy change. So these bonds here are much harder to break than the bonds over here that you're looking at. Okay, so this is what is referred to as the primary structure, and usually there's a polarity going from the 5 prime to the 3 prime end. So you list this primary structure as the sequence of the RNA, much like you talk about the human genome and the sequence of the genome. You will have a similar primary structure of the RNA as the sequence of nucleotides along the molecule. Okay. Unlike DNA, however, what happens in RNA is that it's common for this molecule to fold upon itself. So you typically have a single molecule rather than two complementary molecules. The molecule folds upon itself, forming a variety of different structures. For the longest amount of time, people believed that RNA served just one function, which was being a transient copy of the information in DNA. This is referred to as the central dogma in biology. So your DNA resides in the nucleus. Part of it gets copied, transcribed into RNA, messenger RNA, which comes out into the cytoplasm, and there it derives protein synthesis in the ribosomes. This is your factory for producing proteins in all organisms that we know about. So the belief was that information flowed in a unidirectional fashion from DNA to RNA onto protein synthesis. More recently, what has emerged, however, is that people have realized that RNA plays a very active role in biology. People have realized there are these additional types of RNAs, and the characterization of these RNAs is by what they do not do, not by what they do. So they do not code for proteins. So they're referred to as non-coding RNAs because they are providing a function without really being translated into protein, so they are non-coding in their role. And they're increasing numbers being readily discovered today. There were two Nobel Prizes in this area awarded at different points in time for a variety of these. And this is showing a sort of cartoon view of various ways in which this can happen. One of these is pre-messenger RNA, where there is the RNA catalyzes its own splicing, which is cutting out of a segment of the transcribed RNA from this to produce actual mRNA. It upregulates and downregulates various protein synthesis reactions in the cell. So there's a variety of these functions that RNA serves. In these roles, unlike the role that we are familiar with in protein synthesis, where the codon coding is the one which is important, in these secondary roles for RNA, it is the structure which determines function. And that's almost a tautology in biology for almost all molecules, including proteins. And that's the reason why this problem of protein folding is the grand challenge problem in science today. The experimental determination of structure is quite challenging. Typically, this requires X-ray crystallography. And this is difficult to do because you have to purify the sample and somehow crystallize it. And then there are questions, finally, whether those conditions actually represent physiological conditions in the body in which the molecule actually operates. So what we'll be interested in is computational estimation of RNA secondary structure. And if you can do this, the kind of things you can answer is what is this function of these non-coding RNAs? Because once you know structure, you have a way of probing what should be its function. You also have ways of understanding the genome. Current genome searches are all sequence-based. For non-coding RNAs, for the reasons I'll outline later, the structure is what determines function. So the way nature works is that you will have alternate sequences which perform the same, have the same structure and perform the same function. So you would like to be able to figure out which of these occur in different organisms. So rather than comparing based on sequence alone, you'd like to compare based on structure. Finally, as your understanding grows, you would also like to use this as targets for drug design. And that's the ultimate holy grail of structure prediction, to be able to synthesize targets rather than just test a wide variety of compounds and figure out which one works. Okay. One thing which works favorably in our case for RNA prediction, structure prediction, as compared to proteins, is that RNA structure is hierarchical. I already mentioned to you that this primary structure consists of a linear chain molecule, which is laid out over here from the 5 prime to the 3 prime end, and this is just rolled over here for purpose of fitting in the space. This is just a linear chain molecule. This folds upon itself through the formation of these complementary base pairs. So this is analogous to the adenine pairing with thymine, guanine pairing with cytosine in DNA, except that in this case, thymine is replaced with uracil, so you have AU. In addition, you also have GU pairs in RNA, which is also possible in this case. So the same molecule which you see from here, 5 prime to 3 prime, is laid out over here, and it's rather hard for me from this angle to see, but you can see that it's going around, round, round, coming all the way around and coming back at the other end. Okay. So this is referred to as the primary structure, which is the sequence, and this you determine by various chemical means. This is what high-throughput sequencing does. What you're interested then is in predicting this secondary structure. Once you predicted this, the task of predicting tertiary structure and three-dimensional structure becomes easier because you already know the interactions that have taken place over here. And the nice thing is this progression of interactions is successively stronger. I already mentioned this is very strong. The bonds here are covalent bonds. And over here, the bonds are much weaker. The interactions at this level are even yet weaker. So this progression of prediction progression of formation of structure also guides the mechanisms by which you try and predict. So our goal in this work will be the prediction of secondary structure. This is referred to commonly as folding of an RNA molecule, and there are much greater variety of structures than the DNA double helix. So here is an example of an RNA molecule. This is RNase P, and you will see that what you have are these various motifs which are made up of helices and loops. Those are the two ways in which biologists tend to describe them. So this, even though it's drawn flat as a ladder over here, actually is a helix in the way it actually occurs in three-dimensional structure. And then you have these various loops. And our goal is to try and predict what set of base pairings will occur given the sequence. Now, unlike the previous talk where the interest was in dynamics, we'll be interested only in the thermodynamic equilibrium. In equilibrium, you can have a variety of different structures. The property of a given structure is proportional to this quantity, the Boltzmann constant, which is exponentially decreasing with the free energy change. So you have a higher free energy, you will have less likely structure, a lower free energy will be a more likely structure. Okay. So the most likely structure becomes the one which minimizes free energy. And accordingly, techniques for prediction of secondary structure operate by coming up with models which predict this free energy structure. One of the most efficient models tends to be one which is called the nearest neighbor model. It looks at a base pairing interactions and figures out what is the nearest neighboring base pair and has a way of decomposing the total free energy change in terms of this base pairing interactions over here. This is work also done at the University of Rochester in Doug Turner's lab, who was in chemistry and not participating in our work, but this is a model which is now used by the community very extensively in this case. Okay. So one can imagine various algorithms now for predicting secondary structure by trying to minimize free energy. And that's something which has been done prior to our work. People have done this dynamic programming. The two parts which I want to make over here is this method turns out to be very similar to the Viterbi algorithm, trying to figure out what is the minimum free energy structure among the set of possibilities. And the dynamic program you do is analogous to the Viterbi algorithm. Now, for those of you who work on turbo estimation or turbo coding, you also know that there is the alternate version of this algorithm, the BCJR algorithm, which does this in a soft sense. And there is also the alternate version in this setting, which is referred to in the chemistry terminology as the partition function, which figures out the probability that a base pair at location I will pair at a location in base J. And I will not talk much about how this is done, but this is also computable by using a dynamic program in the similar fashion. Okay. So there are alternate techniques. One is a hard decision, which you're figuring out, trying to figure out what is the single structure which minimizes free energy. The other is a prediction of base pairing probabilities in this sequence. As it turns out, what is the connection now with turbo coding? In turbo coding, for those of you familiar with turbo coding, you would encode the same data in two sequences and then try and provide a joint decoding. You can't do joint decoding exactly because it's too computationally expensive. So you will do approximate joint decoding by using individual decoding and propagating information from one sequence to the other. Well, in nature, it turns out the same structures which provide the same function are encoded as different sequences in different organisms. That's the connection with turbo decoding. So over here, we are showing a particular tRNA across different organisms, and the organisms are listed over here. And what you will see is that the structure is the same. And when I say same, I mean in a topological sense rather than a very exact sense. That's some structure similarity that biologists also use. But if you look at these closely, you will see that there are bases which are modified. For instance, this GC pair is changed to an AU pair over here. And it becomes obvious that as long as you make these mutations in a compensating fashion, each time you change this G to an A, you change the corresponding C to a U, you can still maintain the base pairing interaction and maintain the integrity of the secondary structure. So the structure can still be formed, the organism will still be viable, and will therefore be seen in nature. So the multiple encodings of the same structures are provided to us by nature through its process of compensating mutations, and our goal is to try and predict secondary structures by using these multiple homologs together. So there again is an analogy with turbo decoding. You want to use them collectively to decode. And you can now look at similarities between them. You can see these are the same helices. These are the corresponding regions. And also, in addition, you have the information from the alignment of these two sequences. I didn't talk about alignment, but you also have information about alignment from this sequence. And so the goal of our structural prediction, structural alignment, is to come up with the predictions of these structures as well as a conforming alignment. And obviously, there's constraints from one which impose constraints on what we can do with the other. So this, in some sense, sets the framework. Our goal is to take a number of input sequences, come up with a multiple sequence structure prediction method which predicts the structures of these, and also outputs an optional alignment between these. It turns out that you can formulate this as also a dynamic programming algorithm. There was a mathematical biologist, Sankoff, who formulated this. And again, the similarity with turbo decoding is very telling. This is exponential in complexity in the number of sequences. You can do joint decoding of the two sequences in turbo communications in turbo decoding, but the complexity will be exponential in the interleaver length. So this is something which is not feasible even for two sequences. This is something you cannot do without cutting corners. Okay. So our goal is to try and come up with a probabilistic technique which does this by iteratively computing single sequence folding probabilities and updating these as you go from iteration to iteration in much the same way as turbo decoding does for data decoding. So I'll not talk about this slide in detail. I will present this a little bit in this pictorial form. So the way you can represent this in pictorial form is that you have these two sequences which have their structures. Now the structures can be shown in this lower triangular matrix over here. where you're showing what are the base pairing interactions. So this base at this location is paired with the base at this location in this green, in this red helix over here, and so on. So these helices occur as these traces of lines as you see over here. Corresponding to the second structure, you have a corresponding set of base pairs shown over here. And then there is the alignment between the two, which is between the two sequences. Okay. Now, the techniques which try and predict the best possible secondary structures can be looked at as dynamic programs which try and figure out what is the path for alignment and what are the pairing interactions that would maximize your free energy change across the two sequences. In order to do this in the turbo framework, we cannot live with hard decisions. So the first thing that you do is to actually represent this in a soft framework where the information is probabilistic. So the base pairing properties become properties of base pairing. The alignment properties become properties of alignment. And they're there for the individual sequences. The rest of the figure is really the same. Okay. Now at this point, you realize that if there is a very likely base pair in the sequence, and it's highly likely that the phi prime end of that base pair is aligned with the given phi prime end of the second sequence, and 3 prime end of that base pair is aligned with the 3 prime end of the second sequence, it's providing you information about pairing of the second sequence. And this is the information that you're getting from comparative analysis across the sequences. So we can easily infer pseudo-posterior properties of base pairing for a second sequence by using the information of base pairing in one sequence along with the alignment probabilities. And because everything is probabilistic, all the information remains soft, and this is something we can now incorporate into the folding of the second sequence. Okay. When you have three sequences, the process is not much different. You can use the information in the two sequences and infer what is the properties of base pairing for the third sequence in the same way, and you can weight this, and there is a weighting scheme that we come up with which does this effectively. So here is essentially the way that the scheme works. If you're trying to predict what is the extrinsic information, what is the information provided for folding of a given sequence XM by the other sequences, use the information from all the other sequences, the corresponding alignment property matrices, infer these, weight them in an appropriate manner, combine them to come up with extrinsic information for pairing of a given sequence. The extrinsic information can be incorporated in our framework in much the same way as done turbo decoding. It has an interpretation as a pseudo-posterior probability in this term that you have in turbo decoding also. I apologize, I will not be able to talk about the details here. And the overall algorithm also has the structure of iteratively updating the base-bearing property matrices. Okay. So here is the summary of this. And then once you've evaluated this, you can try and predict how good are your predictions, how well does the method actually work. So I'll present this. Before I make that presentation, I want to first point out that computational complexity is also similar to turbo decoding. We get the complexity comparable to single sequence folding while trying to get the benefits of joint sequence folding. The joint sequence folding would be exponential in the number of sequences. This is u to the power 2k and d to the power 2k, whereas our complexity is k squared. So, okay. So we can now evaluate these and look at how these perform. And I will give you the results quickly. So we evaluated this over a benchmark data set with known structures, and we can evaluate these by looking at sensitivity versus PPV. Sensitivity is the number of actual base pairs that you predicted correctly. PPV is the number of your predictions that are correct. So this is the standard ROC curve. Your goal is to be in the upper right corner over there. And here is turbo fold for 3 sequences, turbo fold for 10 sequences, and alternate techniques, this is lock RNA, which is an alternate technique which gives probabilistic information, RNA AliFold, and single sequence folding. So the message here is that by using this information in an iterative fashion, you can do significantly better than what these other techniques can do. Okay. Time-wise, also, we do significantly better than these. RNA AliFold is much faster, but then you can always get the wrong answer very quickly. Okay. So to conclude, I presented TurboFold, a multi-sequence structure prediction method, which has strong analogies with turbo decoding and is motivated by this analogy over here, and provides accuracy close to or higher than simultaneous folding while having a complexity similar to single sequence folding. I highlighted these connections with coding theory, and for details, if you're interested, there is a paper which just appeared in BMC Bioinformatics providing details. Thank you. Kevin Weeks is the one who works on shape-based techniques. We are collaborating with him and trying to see how we can incorporate shape data in addition to the data that we are incorporating. There is a very strong analogy in the way the shape data can also be incorporated. It's also a posterior probability which you can bake into the folding of a sequence. Traditionally, that has been done for single sequence folding. We are working on trying to see how you incorporate that into multi-sequence folding. That's right. So I'm aware of the work. And more recently, we're also trying to see how we can apply this to HIV and SIV